Good morning. 24 minutes before 9 o'clock. I'm Sam Fuqua. Welcome to the latest installment of KGNU's quarterly series of call-in programs on conflict resolution, giving you practical suggestions for working through the conflicts you may be experiencing in your own life. And hey, some of us will be experiencing those this holiday season. Mary Zinn, my co-producer and co-host for this series, is with us from Zinn Mediation Associates. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Sam.
Always good to be with you. And our panel of experts this morning includes Barry Erdman, who's with us in the studio. Barry is a licensed clinical social worker, provides outpatient mental health assessment and treatment for adults, couples, and families. Been doing that in Boulder County for over 30 years. Also with us by phone is Dr. Jessica Dolgan, the founder and chief clinician of Integrative Therapeutic Solutions. She has specialized in psychological care for young adults and adolescents tailored to their developmental needs. Dr. Dolgan, it's good to have you with us this morning as well.
Thank you.
Yeah. So to begin, we like to begin these programs by giving our panelists time to just give us a general overview of their approach to the topic. And we know that, Mary, holiday time is supposed to be a warm family time, and for most people it is. But things can happen. Old things can reemerge. New things can come up that make it stressful and not the happy time it's supposed to be.
Happy holidays, right. And we have to make sure that happens. Sometimes it doesn't happen on its own.
Barry Erdman, let's say we're not at the family dinner yet, but we've been invited and we're getting stressed out because of something. What general advice do you give?
Well, good morning, everybody. First, I wanted to just start with a quote that I found by a favorite of mine, George Burns, and he said, "Happiness is having a large, loving, caring, close-knit family in another city." So to get things rolling here, it seems to me, I don't know about anyone else who's listening in or interested, it seems to me that when we get together with family, we get plugged into the past and we abandon the present and we start to have anxiety about the future, about how the rest of the event's going to go. And as soon as someone engages us, we immediately go into age regression. We become younger and start shrinking and get smaller and begin to remember all of the stuff that we went through when we didn't know so much. We weren't as intelligent, we weren't as smart, we didn't know how to make sense of things. And we sort of get put into the position of age regression where we're triggered the child part of ourselves, the younger child part of ourselves. It sort of becomes the loud, reactive voice inside our head that begins to channel all the messages that we had in those moments of confusion and uncertainty and fear from other scenarios growing up.
And Jessica Dolgan, what happens to you or to some of the people you work with when they might be thinking about the family holiday dinner that's fast approaching? Even though the relatives are in another city, this is the time of year when we may be going to them.
Well, I think that what I hear primarily from patients more than almost anything else about the holiday season overall, whether it's dinner or not, is just that I think a lot of people are more bothered by the holidays than they like to admit it. I think sometimes people break down into two groups, people who admit that they're bothered by the holidays and people who don't. And but that a good majority of people I hear from in my office are really triggered. They're stressed by the entire process. I think they know somewhere fundamentally that the holidays can be sentimental and tradition-driven and they can be fun. But I think at the forefront for most people, a lot of the time, people are worried about it being expensive, it being frustrating, it being taxing and emotionally activating. And one of the things that I often recommend, even though it's a simple piece of advice, is just to remind people that the holidays are kind of a pass-fail sport, that they don't have to get an A+. They can limit their scope in terms of their expectations, their spending, the amount of time they actually spend with people, what they say yes to and what they say no to, so that they can limit their exposure. And for the holiday dinner, this is, I think, a good piece of advice, too, especially since people find themselves in activating conversations, and they're often repetitive conversations from the past with family members. And so having a good idea of what those conversations are going to look like, I usually ask my clients to make a list of their top triggers for the holiday, what people are going to blow them out, what types of people are going to, you know, trigger their sensitivities, and make a list of those items and be prepared for those types of questions, and or be prepared to let those people know that you intend to not engage with them around the holidays on these topics.
So you have to have some confidence going in, confidence based on preparation. Yeah.
Well, I kind of talk a lot about, I think with my clients, about working smarter versus harder during the holidays, starting the process early of really kind of realigning yourself what your values are and what your family values are. Anytime we're taking on a big project, it's good in business or otherwise to take a look at the scope of the project and to try to apply the most simple course and trajectory. And I tell people to do the same thing with the holidays. You know, kind of turtle wins the race. This is a slow and steady process that, in order to kind of get to the end of it without being broke or too burnt out, you have to kind of chart a trajectory that will feel comfortable to you and your family. And usually that involves practicing saying no more than it means practicing saying yes. It means being more selective about what you do and what you participate in.
That's Jessica Dolgan. Barry Erdman also with us. I'm Sam Fuqua with Mary Zinn. We're talking about family conflicts around the holidays. And if you have a question, a scenario, something you'd like a little help with or would like to share, please join us. 303-442-4242 is the number to call. Again, 303-442-4242. Mary?
You know, we've done this show a number of years around the holidays, and I just want to remind our callers that they have been our best resource. We get some really good tips on this show, so I look forward to hearing what the callers might share with others about how they get through the holidays successfully, happily, making great memories instead of the opposite. And I'm hearing from both Barry and Jessica the preparation piece. The piece about getting your mind in a good place, getting yourself in a good place. And then there's an additional piece, I think, about self-care. How do we take care of ourselves where we're celebrating with so many other people? But if we're aware, and Barry, I love it, age regression, absolutely, happens to us all in family situations. So how do we prepare knowing that's going to happen? And how do we get our mind in a good place about how we're going to react when Uncle Ben says the dumbest thing on the planet?
Well, any more tips on psyching oneself up, Barry?
Well, that's certainly one approach, is to be armed and have plenty of ammunition to be prepared for the battle, if there were to be a battle. I would like to think about it a slightly different angle, which is to say, how can we remind ourselves that we already are strong inside, that we already have a maturity, an adult part, a place inside of us that can feel confident, that has a place of celebration, a place I like to think of it as a small smiling sensation in the center of ourselves. And so quickly we disconnect from that and we forget where our ground is, where our center is. And it only takes, as it was when we were growing up, some bully on the playground for us to lose our center and to be pushed over quickly by a shove or a push. And when you think about Aikido or martial arts, how do we keep our ground? How do we keep our center? So I very much appreciate and highly value the lessons that come from Buddhism, which has to do with starting with the self, starting with where our foundation is, where our strength comes from.
We do have a couple callers. Let's go to the phones. This is Lisa online. Hi, Lisa.
Good morning.
You have a question or comment?
I do. And it's just sort of the same this year, despite my resolve to have a situation be different this year. My husband and I continually do this dance yearly. He plays the Scrooge part, and I am Santa Claus. And we are constantly sort of at one another as to how much I spend. You know, I don't think it's out of bounds. He, of course, does. I'm happy and in the spirit, humming carols, and he is, you know, bah humbug. So it tends to obviously ruin or has the potential to ruin it for both of us. And I, you know, I said this year, you know, somewhere in the middle, but it's not going well. So, and we're just, it's the different expectations and the different ways of viewing the holidays.
Jessica Dolgan, any advice for Lisa?
Well, hi, Lisa. I was thinking to myself I was thinking how often I hear that in my office that people take on roles in families, and
right.
that it's very, very common that we reproduce our role. And I was wondering this year. I'm sure that you know this is something that you thought about previously, but I wonder if kind of taking a moment to stop and to reflect with your husband about you know the way in which you each take on these roles, and you know sometimes when one party takes on a position and another party takes on another position, you know, they can become polarized around one another, and it's very often that gets repeated over and over again. And I wonder what would happen if just even in a light moment, and less of a serious argument or, you know, kind of intensive confrontation, you were able mm-hmm. to ask him about mm-hmm. ways that he continues to polarize against you, and maybe from your own place to take some responsibility about ways that you may overcompensate or polarize around his position. And people tend to move to their respective.
Really... Okay, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
That's okay.
Well, go ahead and finish what you were saying. My apologies.
I was just going to say that, you know, people tend to, once people start getting polarized, you know, they often are closer in the middle when they start than when they end. And I think that sometimes half of the issue becomes about defending one's own position.
Right.
And so, and stopping and taking a look at what role you each play, even in a light way, in a light fashion together, sitting down and saying, you know, this is the role that I kind of play. And when I see you starting to play this role, I polarize and do my piece even more. And mm-hmm. so the question would be then for the both of you, how can you both make a very few minor close steps closer to one another versus kind of polarize and moving outward and making it more of a dramatic strain between the two of you?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I would actually settle for just not ruining it for me, just not being such a Scrooge, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So, yes, I that's excellent advice, and I will try to find a quiet moment, maybe over a little eggnog or something, and do that.
Then I think you can remind him, too, that, you know, not every part of the holidays is exceptional for you, too. I think, you know, this is part of that polarizing, you know, somewhere in there. I wonder if he thinks that, you know, you've turned into Jolly Saint Nick and he's
yeah.
kind of pushing back against
yeah.
this. And you reminding him, you know, not all of this is fun for me. These are the things that are fun for me, and these are the things that actually really aren't. And I have struggles with the holidays just like anybody else. And I wonder if he might soften around his position and also mm-hmm. have some empathy for you instead of feeling like mm-hmm. he has to hold up kind of the black card in order
exactly.
to balance out your Christmas spirit.
And I wonder if there's an element of jealousy that's involved.
Sure, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, I think letting him know that you really do struggle just like anybody else, and that, you know, maybe the shopping really does bother you, or maybe the chronic music is something
well,
that
it does.
Your
I mean, and I think tiredness, if I may just
yeah.
say one more thing, because there's no doubt that it is a very, I come in oftentimes just really very tired and a little frustrated,
sure.
but it's still,
sure.
it's still an important thing to do for me.
And
so
I think
excellent advice.
You can tell him that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think he might be able to relate to that. That might be something that helps him to soften around you. He's like, listen, this is, she's not enjoying every moment of this. She does mm-hmm. this somewhat from obligation and somewhat because she likes this. But also not every bit of this is fun for her, so I don't have to balance this out by being quite as dark. If he actually sees you struggle, I wonder if that might help you guys find a common space.
Well, thanks for that call, Lisa. Barry Erdman, anything to add to what Jessica Dolgan's just said?
I appreciate all the comments already. You know, the way I kind of think of it when I zoom out a little bit is the tension and the conflict and the stress is really just a version of disconnection. And what people aim for or desire in the holidays is to find connection with their spouse or with other family members. And so in thinking about what I mentioned just a few minutes ago about early childhood patterns, I wonder if, Lisa, your husband came from a family where his role was to be the anti-whatever is going on there's the goody two-shoes in the family. There's the troublemaker, sometimes the second-born in the family. Other times there's someone who's the go-to person. I'll get it. I'll do it. I'll do anything you say. And so there's early childhood patterns that we learn from the group that we started with in the family. And
the troublemaker is the second-born? That would be me.
That would be you.
Second of four. Well, thank you, Lisa, for your call. Let's hear from Nancy in Boulder. Hi, Nancy. You're on the air.
Hi. I was going to add something into the conversation that I think kind of came in this last discussion with the last caller, but I'll go ahead and make a quick comment, which is I think it's important not only to worry about how you're going to handle, you know, Uncle Joe when he says something obnoxious, but also how you're going to keep yourself from doing things that don't offend other family members. And when you talk about people regressing to childhood, I think part of that is because other family members remember them and treat them like they were when they were 12 instead of the way they are now. And so it kind of it helps to create that regression. And so I think it's really useful to think about taking the person, you know, your sister, your brother, whoever, as they are now, and remembering to notice as they are now instead of going into those patterns from childhood.
Excellent.
Thanks, Nancy. We're at 303-442-4242. That's 303-442-4242. If you'd like to join our conversation, conflict resolution every quarter here on the Thursday Morning Magazine. And this quarter, as we have done for several years, we're trying to talk about and talk through some of the issues that come up when families get together for the holidays. Do any issues come up for you, Mary Zinn?
Absolutely, they do. And I can't help going back to Lisa's turmoil about how much to spend. And what do you do? How much is appropriate? We live in, for some of us, what is great affluence, and some of us not. So I wonder if families sit down and make agreements, because our expectations can take us down the path of most disagreement if we haven't talked about what we agree to in the first place. So, Lisa, back to your question, I wonder if you and your husband might not have an agreement about what's appropriate to spend during the holiday time and take the pressure off of everyone because the agreement's in place. So what I find out is back to the childhood piece also for me. I do the regression piece with my brother. Are you listening? Maybe he's not today. That would be good. And I become the little sister that he still wants to have under his purview, I guess I would say. And I react as if he is the big brother, threatening, teasing, all of those other things. Instead of, I think as Barry and Jessica pointed out, bringing my best self to the occasion. Whatever it is, I'm really confident about who I am now. So why do I show up as his little sister? Why do I let that happen? And the business about being centered, about doing what Tom Crum talks about in The Magic of Conflict, that you step aside the great gust that comes at you. You don't add fuel to the fire. You let that other person have their problem or whatever's going on with them, and you continue to be the confident person that you are.
So what about the common, I suppose, all too common, of you're at the holiday gathering and simply someone is getting too drunk, you know, and there's, you can see trouble ahead. Jessica Dolgan, how would you advise handling that?
Well, I think I was, you know, it's funny, I was making a list of questions that I thought might come this morning, and I think that that's inevitably one of the questions is what happens. And, you know, I think that, to start with, I'll make a comment that reflects on both items that we were just discussing about. One of the things that I think is really important is both with obviously handling someone who's intoxicated, but also making sure, someone else mentioned, making sure that your own behavior is within reason and that you're monitoring yourself. I think one way to do that is, you know, we tend to dive into the holidays and then try to swim our way through and just kind of get through the channel as fast as we can. But I think sometimes starting at the end of the holidays, thinking about how we want to feel at the end of the holidays and working our way back into the situation might be helpful in terms of managing conflict. How do we want conversations to go with people? What are we going to do if the person who gets intoxicated gets intoxicated? How are we going to talk to them about that in a meaningful way so they're still modeling good behavior in front of family and friends and not embarrassing themselves. How are we going to keep ourselves modeling good behavior, whether it's not overspending in front of our children and actually sticking to a budget, or whether it's monitoring our own stress, sometimes even saying no to a gathering or inviting somebody else? Sometimes I like to encourage people to actually congratulate others when they set a limit. If someone says, you know, we won't be able to make it to the Christmas party, that you're able to say, well, good for you guys, you know, good for you guys for saying no or setting a limit. And so I think sometimes if you can anticipate some of the situations that might arise, including somebody becoming intoxicated, and thinking about how, you know, your best and healthiest and also most stable, even centered self would handle a situation like that, can be really helpful instead of finding yourself caught off guard by that situation. Usually, you know, most of us can tap into a healthy part of conflict resolution and can meaningfully manage a problem if we're somewhat prepared for them to occur. And I think if we can kind of work our way backward into the holidays and have some expectations around what might happen, it might make it easier for us to take that drunk relative aside, or to use the, you know, aid of another stable and reasonable adult to kind of pull that person aside and help them to kind of stabilize it in front of, you know, children and other people who would be influenced by their behavior.
One of the other things that's come up in this show previously is that it's best advised not to use that family gathering to hash out whatever the big issue is. If it's the person who's getting drunk at all the family gatherings, when do you deal with that? Not at the gathering when you have all of the children there in front of you. And when do you say, if you can come to the gathering and not get drunk, we'd love to have you there. Otherwise, we'd really prefer that you not come and have that conversation away from the party.
I think it's great advice. And one of the items that I mention a lot to clients is avoiding taboo topics and just remembering that if people are already under duress, that the holidays is not a time to air laundry or fix issues that have been coming up for the last 20 years. And personally or with respect to others, don't allow yourself to become intoxicated, not dealing with the issues either. Recognize that this is a time to actually skip out from these items and encourage other family members to not take up the battle for these issues during this time when everybody's strained, everybody's stressed, everybody's, you know, time is being kind of pulled in every direction, and they're strained financially and emotionally. But this is not, you're absolutely right, this is not the time to air the laundry, nor is it time to try to actually search for conflict resolution in the heat of the holidays, and prompting yourself not to go there, and then reminding other people not to go there, family members, prior to a visit, I think is incredible advice. Very helpful.
And that's Dr. Jessica Dolgan, founder, chief clinician of Integrative Therapeutic Solutions in Denver. Also with us, Barry Erdman, a Boulder-based therapist and licensed clinical social worker. Mary Zinn from Zinn Mediation Associates. We're talking conflicts around the holidays and families during this latest installment of our quarterly series of conflict resolution programs. It is coming up on 9 o'clock, KGNU Boulder, Denver. The phone lines are open at 303-442-4242. We invite you to join our conversation, whether you're dealing with a scenario, as Lisa, our earlier caller, was, or you have a tip for that, as our second caller, Nancy, did. We would really welcome your participation this morning at 303-442-4242. Mary?
Well, I'm wondering if we can get from Barry and from Jessica some kind of hands-on pieces about when you feel like you're going to explode, when you're sitting in the moment and you want to be enjoying yourself and you want to be that best self or centered person, and you can feel your body heat starting to rise and you can feel that something's not going the way that you will be able to maintain and be in control of your best communications. So just some advice about what do you do in the heat of it?
Well, I'll take a stab at that. When you describe that scenario, it reminds me of how we're reactive rather than acting. We're in reaction mode in the sense that all of a sudden our physiology, our brain, is going into fight, flight, or freeze reactivity. And at that moment, the blood rushes from one part of your brain to another, your muscles tighten, your breath starts to get high and shallow and fast, and your body is, and hormones, cortisol and adrenaline is flowing, and there you are thinking to yourself, what could I do? Well, you don't really think at that moment. You're already on automatic pilot. And if we were in our paleo ancestry mode, we'd be about to run away from the tiger or lie still and make believe we're invisible or be ready to attack back. So there is not a whole lot you can do when you're stressed that way in terms of knowing how to do it intellectually or try to use your smarts. So my words of wisdom here is very simple, is we have to begin to change the physiological reaction that's going on, which is automatic pilot. It's happening before we're thinking. Excuse me. So how does that happen? It happens first by being able to take some deeper belly breaths. And by doing that, you're allowing much more oxygen into your lungs and into your bloodstream to begin to reverse this panic, adrenaline, cortisone reaction to a relaxation response. And when that happens, it's like taking that sigh of relief when the danger and the threat is past. And we begin to find a sense of calm in our body that returns. So it could be just a matter of three deep breaths, and all of a sudden you sort of throw the switch from the automatic pilot back to manual. And by focusing on our breathing and changing how we breathe, that's the one of the few mechanisms in our body that's automatic and we have full manual control over. So just by focusing on breathing, we're already at the crossroads, we're at the intersection to be able to take charge of the controls again and to begin to come back to making some sense and knowing what to do.
I can see myself sitting there just really getting heated as you're describing and my brain not being in its best place and saying, I'm taking three breaths and just saying to the other person, if I need to, that's what I'm going to do. And just doing it and inviting them to help me find the space to do it instead of letting them think that I just am disengaging completely. But let them know I'm taking a strategy in hand and I'm actually doing something about it.
Maybe. I can see situations where that wouldn't go over so well because it's sort of out of context. But you can't say, just a minute, you have a great point here. Give me a minute to, I'd like to come back to that and then go to the bathroom or go get a drink. And while you're doing that, that's your time to disengage, sort of like a timeout where you're taking care of yourself to regain your center and to begin to remember that you can approach this not from the reactive place, but from the place that knows how you want to put out what you want to say.
Jessica Dolgan?
Yeah, I think that's all very, very good advice. I think that, you know, one of the things that's important to remind ourselves of is that when we get flooded by affect, when people, you know, the research has shown that when people have very, very strong emotional reactions, it can make them feel neurologically scattered and just like we were just discussing, it can kind of trigger that flight or fight response in the brain. And so I think one of the first things to just remind yourself of is actually what is happening in the process. You know, when you actually get escalated and, you know, you feel the flutters in your belly and your face gets flushed because you're furious or angry, and just to remind yourself, I think sometimes when we I often liken really strong feelings to waves, and when they kind of come upon us, I think we have an impression for just half a second that they're not going to go out, that the wave is not going to retreat, and we're going to be stuck in this terrible position of feeling furious as though we're going to dive across the dining room table and strangle somebody. And the fact of the matter is that wave is actually going to retreat over a period of time. And I think that sometimes just even reminding yourself, I'm activated, I've gotten flooded. When I get activated like this, I can't really think clearly. This is not going to stay like this. If I do some breathing and just hold still even for a moment, you know, the body will reestablish the homeostasis. And then the second component, I think, is just to be really reasonable with yourself and how you're feeling and your mood. You know, I think one of the things that happens a lot with people is first we get frustrated and angry. And then part two is we get mad at ourselves for becoming frustrated and angry. Like, I can't believe I'm allowing this to bother me. And really giving yourself just a little bit of room and reminding yourself that this is challenging, that you may be having a hard time, and not doubling it down by also giving yourself a hard time for struggling for a moment, and not prompting yourself that you're not supposed to have a perfect emotional performance. You're supposed to, like I said, this is a kind of a pass-fail sport. You're supposed to get through this difficult moment. And I think sometimes when we remove the judgment and you stop being so hard on yourself for 5 seconds, then the brain actually starts calming, the wave retreats, and you're able to return to some sort of normative level of homeostasis, and you recognize that you do have all the requisite skills to handle a stressor in the moment, and that you can calm yourself, and that you are going to be fine. But I think we have to remember that the being hard on yourself tends to prolong the process. It tends to keep that affect, the flooding or frustration or anger on board. So, you know, removing step two, just allowing yourself to be upset for a moment, recognize that someone probably has triggered you. This does bring up a lot of difficult, you know, kind of past memories and struggles. Just giving yourself a moment to have the struggle and just basically reminding yourself that there is no such thing as a permanent struggle, that the struggle will automatically retreat, I think sometimes helps people just catch their breath in the moment.
We're at 303-442-4242 if you'd like to join the conversation this morning as we talk through family conflicts around the holidays. Maybe you'd like to share a story. What was the worst thing that ever happened to you at a holiday gathering, and how did you get through it? We'd be interested in your tips and your experiences as well when you call 303-442-4242. Joining us now from Denver, we have Dave on the line. Hi, Dave.
Hey, good morning, all. Yes, you know, I don't have a particular context in mind here, but there is a kind of a recurrent thing that I think happens, and especially in the context of holidays, and that is, you know, especially as we've grown older, perhaps we've put some physical distance and time between us and our siblings and our parents and certain conditions. And I think one of the issues is that, you know, these feelings and conflicts, we put space and time between them, and so we don't necessarily recall how, you know, what the conflicts might be and then how to respond to them in a learned way, because we have in fact put that space and time between us and them, and maybe that in fact has been our solution for many of us who perhaps even are a good distance away from family. So I guess my question would be then, what's other than writing and being studious about our previous experience with our family and friends, how would we keep up to date and keep this, you know, healthy so we're not constantly revisiting this?
Barry, any suggestions there?
You know, sometimes I think about practicing when I go to the movies, though I don't go to the movies very often anymore. But how often do we go to the movies and say, what a beautiful array of colors on that screen, and listening to the soundtrack? I mean, most of the time we're in the movies and we get sucked in immediately to what the movie makers, the directors, want us to react to. And it's set up and designed for us to trigger us in emotional ways. And how often can we stop in the middle of the movie while the movie's going and just say, look at those marvelous colors. Look at how the light reflects off of that screen. And it's a kind of a way of checking in with the here and now and getting back to the present of what the reality actually is. The practical tools to how to remind yourself about where you are, to my mind, is the practice in checking in with your five senses. Because at any given time, there's data, raw data, streaming into your five senses, and that's the present moment. That's evidence of the present moment. What am I hearing? What am I seeing? What am I feeling, tasting, smelling right now? And when you do that, that's your entryway back into reminding your insides that you are the age that you are.
And Jessica, anything to add there?
Things that I was thinking about, especially when you mentioned kind of the time and space continuum and not seeing people quite as much and becoming, you know, older in our relationships and having more distance between ourselves and our, you know, family members. I think sometimes just going in maybe with the agenda of trying to connect with the person that you actually see on that day versus trying to take on the entire historical dynamic of the family can be really helpful. It's, you know, a technique for staying
staying present. I think that if we remember that everybody we're visiting with is made up of a culmination of their experiences, but they're also made up of where they are in their current life space, and maybe taking the time to try to connect with the person that you're meeting that day again, the sister that you're seeing that you haven't seen in a little while, or the nephew that's grown over several years, and trying to kind of get in touch with where the person is in their current space versus trying to take on the entire family history. I know in my own family, and I hear in my office quite a bit here, it's often that's the part of the holidays, I think, in these prior to these meetings, it can be almost stifling and can really cause you to freeze up, is trying to take on the entire emotional history of the family, all the dynamics, who's angry with who has tension, who has fallen too far apart from one another, instead of kind of meeting each other on the day that you're there. And I think sometimes that can make the entire event a little bit more manageable for a person, especially if there's been time and space, instead of trying to take on that entire past and also trying to make sense of what your own role is in the family, instead of reestablishing your role. If you haven't seen family members or there's been time and distance, the good thing is, you know, we always get new days. You know, tomorrow's always a new day. The sun always comes up on another day. And, you know, you get an opportunity to kind of reinvent or reestablish what your role is with the family in that given time frame that you're spending time with them, versus trying to reestablish or rework anything that you've had going on by history.
We've got a few more callers on the line, 303-442-4242, talking family conflicts and the holidays. Sean in Denver, good morning. You're on KGNU.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Doing all right. How are you?
Good. I have a question kind of around in-laws and kind of dealing with in-laws. I'm recently married. I've been married for a couple of years, and I kind of find myself now struggling with kind of seeing life through the eyes of my in-laws, and also not feeling like, like when in-laws visit or when we go down and visit for the holidays, that, you know, I kind of feel like my Christmas or Thanksgiving or whatever has been taken hostage. Now I kind of have to appeal what I want to do to other people and like a whole other family that I'm not really kind of trying to understand still. And suddenly go out cards. Just kind of how to work around that.
Jessica?
Well, first of all, I think that's a great question. I think a lot of people feel like that. You know, there's this, like, pull, I can imagine, to try to figure out how do you maintain your own traditions, some sort of a semblance of what your own expectation is of what a holiday should look like, while also being polite and engaged with in-laws. And, you know, one of the thoughts that I have is I wonder what it would feel like, you know, maybe not using the word hostage, but sitting with, you know, your partner and letting your partner know. I talked about this a little bit earlier, or kind of backing your way into the holidays, maybe expressing to your partner what your desires might be like for the day, or maybe if there's some traditions and or ways that you'd like to feel, or activities that you'd like to participate in that you'd like to bring to the holiday, so you can actually feel like you're part of this family instead of an observer or someone who's kind of on the bleachers while they, you know, do their sport of Christmas for the day. And have a conversation with your partner and talk about maybe some things that you'd like to bring to this. And I wonder if maybe your partner can join you in personalizing this a little bit, and you guys can make that a little bit of a team sport. If the family might not be more embracing or open to having this be a activity or day or time that changes. I think sometimes people can be very traditional too, and so for newcomers this can kind of feel a little stifling if they're repeating kind of their similar habits or patterns or strategies for the day. And I wonder if you had your partner's support, if they might feel more open to you leading an activity or interjecting or changing the tone of part of the day, so that you can actually feel involved. And I think letting your partner know that, you know, it's not a personal issue, but you're just still getting to know the family, and sometimes you do feel like you're an observer, or that you're a passive observer, that, you know, you've kind of been taken hostage. I think it's really fair, and I wonder if you can get their support, if you can start trying to help this family recognize that, you know, they're a family with you too, and with your input.
What do you think, Sean?
I've always been kind of very passive around what I want to do, or kind of way I see things. So yeah, I think that's a good idea. Just very kind of come to the table and say, well, you know, this is kind of what I want. So yeah, it's very helpful. It's definitely.
And even if it's something small, you know, it can be something very small. You can just say, you know, when we have our friends over, hon, you know, we really enjoy playing this game, and I'd like to bring it with us. I think your parents would really enjoy it. Or, you know, I think one of the nights that we're down there, I'd like to cook everybody a meal if that's something that you really enjoy doing. But I think, you know, if, really asking them to be conscious of the fact that you'd like to be involved and that this sounds like a family, that without maybe calling that out to your partner in a soft and really sensitive and kind way, like saying that you want to be more involved, this sounds like a family that just kind of will just kind of roll on with its own repertoire of behaviors and may just think that you're kind of on for the ride instead of being somebody who is actually part of their family now and has opinions and feelings and ultimately will probably change the way they celebrate the holidays, even if it's just slightly. And I think that that's a really important space for you. You are part of their family now.
One of the things that we might keep in mind, too, is every time we gather, every time we have this interaction, and Sean, for you, as the years go on, you have the opportunity to create new traditions, new pieces that are about you and your new family and your new relationship that bring in elements of what you're used to and honor your traditions and your partner's. And it will become new. It will become something that is the tradition that carries forward from this new relationship.
I want to piggyback on all the good things that are being suggested. The way I was thinking about answering the question was to say, well, you're feeling disconnected, or you're threatened that you might remain disconnected if you continue these traditions that weren't ones that you were brought up with. So then the challenge is to say, well, how can you ensure that you stay connected? And before I said connected with the self, but what if you set up conspired with your wife beforehand to say, you know, when I start to feel disconnected, I want to wink at you, or I'll give you a little hand signal, and that means I need you to put your hand on my shoulder, or to smile, and just be reminded that you're not abandoned and you're not alone, but you are connected to her at least. And that might be a signal for her, if she's willing, to help conspire with you to bring you back into the conversation or to ask for your input. And that way, you're starting to feel like you're part of what's going on again.
Good luck, Sean. Let's hear from Sally in Boulder. Hi, Sally. You're on the air.
Hello there. Thank you. My sister will likely be coming and staying us for the holidays, and she's a pretty needy and not very together person, very lonely, doesn't really have a partner anymore, all sorts of things. So, and I know generally what happens is she drives everybody crazy, and she drives me crazy. She just kind of talks nonstop, and I'm concerned that I will lose it at some point. And I've been listening and, you know, to keep myself centered as much as possible, but knowing that she'll be here for several days, 24 hours, I just always am concerned about that.
You know, I hear that in your voice.
Yeah,
I think we all do.
Yeah. You know about the 72-hour rule, don't you?
Yes.
Excuse me?
The 72-hour rule means never spend more than 72 hours with a family member.
As my mom would put it, relatives like fish begin to smell after, I think my mom says 5 days, but for others it could be three. Well, yeah. Jessica Dolgan, do you have any advice for Sally as she approaches this visit from her sister?
Yeah, well, first of all, Sally, I just feel I have a lot of empathy for you. I mean, I can tell the strain in your voice already. And the thing is about people who are struggling or who are needy is fundamentally, I think they don't think of themselves this way, but it does carry kind of a level of narcissism with us when someone's struggling quite a bit. And it's hard because you don't want to judge and you don't want to give them a hard time. But, you know, I think that when the one of the recipes that can really work when it comes to needy people is doing the best you can to head this off at the pass. So I think that it sounds like she's going to need a lot of attention. It sounds like she doesn't show much restraint with respect to kind of sharing and talking kind of endlessly. And I wonder if, you know, you might be able to kind of share a schedule with her
up front. So you might be able to say something like, you know, I set aside just some time for you and I today. I thought we might, you know, go get a bite to eat, or I thought we might finish some shopping, and then we can talk and you can get my undivided attention. But later today, I have to, you know, take these pies over here, or I got to get all this cooking done, and I just don't want you to feel not heard. So I set aside this time and kind of head her off at the pass so that she kind of gets a schedule and a timeline around where she does get to have some undivided attention from you without feeling like you don't have boundaries, and where you also let her know when you have to take care of yourself or when you have to take care of other people, all without it not being quite as transparent. I think sometimes we don't head these things off at the pass, then the person who is needy or volatile is talking and being demanding, and what's really happening is we're just slowly losing our temper, and it's just a matter of time. Just like you said, you're not sure you can make it. You probably are feeling very internally frustrated, and she doesn't sound like she's as cognizant of you and your needs. It's not like she's taking, it doesn't sound like she's taking good stock in the fact that you're becoming overwhelmed. And so I think you can appeal to that level of narcissism that just comes when people are struggling and are unhappy and need to talk a lot and can be kind of needy, as you said, and kind of head her off at the pass and maybe provide her with some preemptive and proactive time where she feels like you have just set aside the time for her, and then you also draw some really firm lines around times when you won't have as much time.
Okay.
And I would frame it in the context of doing this for her, since it sounds like that's what she wants to talk about, is her right now. You can kind of appeal to people's narcissism at times, and it, you'd be surprised at how sometimes some of these techniques can really help without her feeling like she's, you know, able, that you're being transparent. I think that she'll actually find you to be genuinely engaged and invested in her. Especially if you come out early with this. I wanted to start right when you got here by spending some time with you and really let her have some real uncontained couple of hours where she really gets to share. But then after that, there's a line drawn around the rest of the time.
Okay. Thank you.
And Sally, sure. Just a quick reminder to take care of yourself so you're not overtired. That point of losing it comes often when we're awfully tired and stressed.
Mm-hmm.
And along the lines, when you're starting to notice all the things that irritate you about her, you're in critical parent mode. You're in the mode of trying to say, she shouldn't do this, she should do that, why can't she do this, she ought to do that. So a good self-care kind of check is to think about how you can try to drum up or drudge up, if it might be a compliment, to acknowledge something about her that is something that you can say that is a positive thing. That way it may help to reset your circuitry to find something to compliment. Oh, you're a really good storyteller. Or, you know, I didn't know how much it means to you to share some of what's important in your life with me. And really what's going on with her is she's anxious and she doesn't know what to do being in your house for so many days. So she's in her kind of survival mode as well.
Uh-huh.
So sometimes a small compliment, or I like those shoes, or, oh, I like the way you fixed your hair this morning, kind of breaks the tension and sort of helps both of you to reset back to maybe another comfort zone where you both would rather be.
Well, thank you for calling, Sally, and best of luck. Have a good holiday.
Thank you very much.
We have one more call we're going to be able to get to before we wrap up this latest installment of our series of conflict resolution call-ins on KGNU. Let's hear from Lance. Hi, Lance. You're on the radio.
Hi. A lot of great suggestions so far and a lot of great thinking on this. I'm wondering if you could speak to the principle, the idea about sometimes how the behaviors we see in others and that we complain about the most are the ones that we kind of struggle with ourselves. And just the whole idea of maybe, you know, rather than kind of pointing the finger that the problem is always with the other people, that maybe, you know, the issue is residing within ourselves, and that the most we can do, and maybe, you know, you can talk about this, but maybe I'm advocating for this as well, is to kind of look, you know, more inward and really focusing on what can I do, you know, within myself to become a better person, that people can get along with better, rather than just seeing everyone who's coming to the table as the problem. I wonder if you could all speak to this a little bit.
I'll give that to Barry Erdman first, who's kind of addressed to some similar comments, I think, earlier in the program.
I think you're already on the right track, and I what you're saying makes a great deal of sense. When we start to see things that bother us or we get reactive, like I was saying earlier, we're off center. We're not really being in our present moment self. We're sort of responding, rebounding from other times and places where we're triggered or we're feeling like we're not doing our best. So to my mind, in this old transactional analysis, TA model, I'm okay, you're okay, the critical parent can become a nurturing parent if you begin to remind yourself that you can say things that are loving, that treating yourself more kindly and beginning to recognize that the person who's bothering you, they also are deserving of love and caring and loving kindness in the Buddhist way. It's a good way of transforming and changing what could be a kind of a aggravating, never-ending critical situation inside yourself and tension between you and others, to remembering that the purpose for the holiday, it has something to do with finding those connections, strengthening those connections, building bridges where there weren't any before. And where is that going to happen? Well, the mechanics of it happens from a place of caring and love and compassion and acknowledgement of some basic goodness that's deep down and underneath all the other trash and garbage that we keep on trying to pick up and sort and figure out what to do with.
It's a good segment, a good statement as we near the end of our program. Jessica Dolgan, what would you like to share with Lance on that topic?
Well, first of all, I think Lance, that's such an insightful comment. I mean, I think that really, you know, it reminds me of when people come for couples treatment to my office. You know, if we can just start by looking at ourselves and, you know, controlling, you know, we ultimately only have control over ourselves and our own approach to things. And I think it's very insightful for you to say, you know, that all of us should monitor externalizing blame and quickly kind of pulling out the big finger to point at other people and taking the time to really think about how can I simplify the holiday process? What do I bring to the table that can be kind of problematic? What is it about my mood or my approach or the way that I kind of either overcompensate or undercompensate or overspend or, you know, underengage that impacts other people, and what can I do this year to be a little bit easier for other people is an incredible approach. You know, I think if everybody was doing a little bit of that, ultimately we wouldn't have as many of these conflicts at the table or, you know, around the Christmas tree or, you know, menorah. I think if we apply this principle that Lance brought up, which I think is very insightful, I'm thinking maybe Lance should come work at my practice. This is very intuitive and insightful advice. I think that if we, you know, start with you know, what we need to do and how we can work on ourselves, and everybody brings their best game with respect to, you know, balance and self-care and monitoring themselves and their own triggers, I think ultimately we have a very good holiday season.
And Mary Zinn, we'll give you what will probably be the final word here.
Well, it's a season of goodwill. And Lance, thanks for bringing this up, that we can choose that. We get to choose how we respond, react, how we act. And what I think I'm going to focus on after having been with this program today is remembering that everyone is well-intended. It's a holiday. This, we want to be making great memories, and we want it to be a happy time. So let's have a great holiday. Let's know that we're well-intended and others are, and that they didn't wake up this morning saying, how can I make Mary miserable? Not their intention.
And what I'll remember when I go to my family gathering, my sister's in New Jersey, is when my driving comes up, I will just not say anything. And the fact that I totaled my mother's car when I was 16, mm-hmm. and my mother still holds it against me, I will just put that behind me and go to my
good job, Sam.
Centered place. We really appreciate all our callers this morning, and Kathy for handling the phones. Thank you. As Mary said at the start, the insight and the issues that our callers raise really make these, I think, the worthwhile shows that we hope they are. Jessica Dolgan is the founder and chief clinician of Integrative Therapeutic Solutions in Denver. Jessica Dolgan, if people would like to learn more about you or your practice, what would you suggest?
Oh, they can give us a call or visit us online anytime. There's some feedback about the way that the practice works and our approach to working with adolescents, 20-somethings, and their families. And they're also welcome to give us a call. We do offer a one-hour free consultation to all new clientele. Mostly, we really impress upon the public that they should be interviewing their health care providers, and we also want to interview our patients for best fit. So if anyone ever has a question or need, they can always call or come on down and get some advice anytime. They're welcome.
Great. Well, thank you for joining us this morning. Jessica Dolgan, integrativetherapeuticsolutions.com is the website. Barry Erdman, clinical social worker and therapist in Boulder. If people want to get a hold of you or find out more about your practice, what would you suggest?
Very simply, quickly, www.bouldertherapist.com.
Bouldertherapist.com.
And I'm happy to answer calls and questions and chat with people.
Thanks for joining us, Barry.
Welcome.
Mary Zinn, Zinn Mediation Associates. Do have a good holiday.
Thank you for everyone's participation. Thank you to our panelists and to you, Sam, our host.
9:30 at listener-supported KGNU, the Morning Sound Alternative, coming your way after this.